I'd just like to thank you again for attending or listening to our good station. We have privilege to have a person that has international notoriety. He's a leading modern-day thinker, author of a timely book, Fragments of Reality, which is a hot seller, Peter Kayanda. And he's well-renowned world traveler, practiced self-realization since the early years. I'd like to introduce him to you, the audience. Peter, please say hello to the audience.
Hello, David. Hello, audience.
All right. Peter, normally when I get a chance to talk to him, I'm very much privileged to ask him some good questions that I've had problems with. I know for a serious practitioner, and this is basically a topic that was written in your good book, I just want to go over a few things with you in that area and get your, if you'd like to elaborate on them. It says here, always concentrate on your state of beingness, never on the mode of being. It says, don't try, genuinely be. Understand, you can never be too humble. Now, I want to stop right there. What does that mean, never be too humble? That's a very, very powerful statement, the word never. It's endless. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Well, what I try to tell there or say there is that you can never be too humble. And by humble, I mean towards yourself, most of all, and towards everything else as well. And if there's only one advice or guide or whatever, I think that's the one which leads you to the all the way to the never-ending, never or ever or always. And that's be humble. And I think you can find that also in many books and agent writings. And the same advice goes around and comes around, and there's a reason for that one. And if you start to think about it and ponder and also sort of peel off like an onion, you will see that there are a lot of different layers for the humbleness. And it's so you can start to be humble about your own things, like, you know, what's happening in your life. Then being humble about how do you treat yourself, and humble about your situation, understanding what you can do and what you cannot do, what things are in your control, what are not in control. So there's a lot of different aspects for the being humble, and it always gives new ideas and new ways of expressing itself. And this way, I think it's also good advice to tell that, remember that, you know, to be always humble, because it's also so easy to slip away.
Well, that's interesting, but Jesus made an approach to humility by washing feet. So what's with this humility and weakness? Or can you make strength out of that? Or is that a sign of weakness?
Humbleness in its true meaning is not weakness. I think the example you gave about Jesus is that why he was washing feet was that he was showing by practical example how to serve other people. And it's actually exactly the opposite of weakness. It's strength if you can serve other people and do good things. But then you have to be pure in your mind and your heart and do it just for the joy of doing it and from the compassion. And if that's not your standing point, then it's not coming from your heart, and then after all, it can be a weakness.
Okay, all right, that's an interesting approach on that. And it says here, be patient always. The word always is here. You're using some very, very extreme terms like never and always. It says forgive and be kind to yourself. Now that is very much relative, because being kind to oneself is relative. It's based on what the individual determines as kindness to oneself. What do you mean by that?
It's so easy to forgive others, or actually, it's not easy, but typically we forgive others easier than we forgive for ourselves. And it's same applies, I think, to the kindness. And well, we typically want to be nice to other people, but we should be nice to ourselves as well. And how can you be forgiving and kind? You have to be yourself as well, towards yourself, kind and forgiving. And that's the meaning, just to remember and remind that, hey, if you forgive all the other guys, you should give for yourself as well. And if you're kind to all the other people, you should be kind to yourself. So don't take too hard things and forgive yourself.
Okay, now here's one that I took issue with. It says, there are no excuses. What do you mean by that? Why do we have that word excuse in our vocabulary if there are no excuses?
The article you know referring is actually for the self-inquiry meditation practitioner's guide or advice. So it has to be also interpreted in that context.
Okay, I see now. That makes sense, yes.
Yeah, so do not fixate on anything and there are no excuses. And that's mainly when you're meditating and you're going inner and doing self-inquiry. The point is that you do not fixate on anything, what is coming and what are you experiencing, and just sort of creating a beliefs or ideas or some illusions around those. So it's just in that practice, and otherwise I don't think it's so valid.
Okay. And I like that the last statement is only the truth survives. So that's a very powerful statement. Would not you agree?
It is. And since there's no absolute truths in this level, how we observing the world, it also means that the truth can never be static. It can never be, if you write it down, it's just one point of view. But it is not truth. Truth is always a new, fresh. And this is the reason also that, you know, we have to keep on exploring and experiencing. And we're always looking things from our current perspective and from our current beliefs and experiences and know-how, but those are just valid in this point in time and space. But, you know, next year, next day, next moment, we might think differently and see things differently. And this is absolutely true as well for the history, for our sort of common history. And if you read recent books and you may find out that there are things, you know, which been public knowledge or been sort of the common accepted understanding of some historic events, but now there might be some new evidence for those things, and it may change the whole point of view and how we perceive even the, you know, the all the things. So truth is always new and fresh, and it's up to us to define what is it and reach for it.
That's interesting. Very good. You know, I have a question on silence also. I notice there's even a song, I think about Solomon of Garfunkel and I forget the other person, there was a duo years ago, The Sound of Silence. Now, that's the paradox. How can you have the sound of silence? Isn't that rather paradoxical?
Yes and no. And that's exactly why it's called sound of silence. And if silence has a sound, how would it sound like? So, in order to experience that firsthand, you have to quiet down first. And that's the hardest part. You cannot hear it by just staying quiet and trying to be not listening to anything. The sound of silence starts to speak only when you doing and keeping the silence there for a while and you're getting used to it. Nowadays it seems that a lot of people are afraid of silence. There's a lot of music, there's a lot of background noise, there's a lot of things going on, and if not elsewhere, all in your mind. And that's the thing. The sound of silence will speak to you only when you allow and let it to speak to you. And that will happen when you isolate yourself. You do not have thoughts, you do not have anything what you're doing. It only happens in silence. And that's why it's so difficult to hear, and it seems like a paradox. But one could say that the sound of silence is your inner voice. And you can hear your inner voice only when you tune to that channel. And it takes some practice to find the proper channel.
Well, you know, I like that when you say that you actually can discern. I've listened to music, and I have the type of ear that a complete orchestra. I can single out a flute, the sound of a flute with all the other instruments playing, or I can single out any particular instrument that's within that orchestral arrangement and single it out and see what they're doing. That means, based on that, if one can actually hear lots of things but single out things within that arrangement, it's like a mom turning off hearing her child cry. Everyone else hears the child cry, but she doesn't, because she knows the child is okay and she can turn off. So that's what's fascinating about sound. So sound is all relative. Can we turn things off totally and not hear anything, even though there's a lot of noise, if you will, going on around us?
Well, inner silence and inner state of mind is not about external voices. You can always detach from what is happening around you, and that's what silence is also about. If you're always having that calm bond or calm silence voice, and you listen to that voice, and so you can be in the middle of a hectic situation or whatever happening in the outside world, you're still calm and you're still focused and in a peaceful and quiet state of mind, and that will help you to act and interact with your world. So it doesn't need to be that we doesn't mean that we need to isolate and just to get rid of the world, so to speak.
Well, that's very fascinating. I know that, for instance, I'm trying to think now, what would be beneficial for some of my contacts, a couple of executives that tend to have difficulty even handling people. And the reason being is because of egotism and being on an authoritative level. They get along with people better. And also the word humble. Person that's humble seems like they get more, make more progress, and they get more activity out of an individual if you approach them with a approach of humility. Now, as far as sound is concerned, I mean, you know, and one being silent, that too can help a person think. For instance, if I have a workload, if I turn the TV off, if I turn the radio off, I can concentrate and focus more on what I'm doing. So silence, in that sense, is very therapeutic, and it's very helpful as far as production is concerned, is it not?
Exactly. It helps us to focus on the things what we want to do. And if you also study your thoughts and how do you get the good ideas or the moments of inspiration or the creative thoughts and ideas and new things, they do not typically come. They do not come from your thinking. They do not come when you want them to come. They come when you in that particular state of mind. And they, as a matter of fact, they come out of your thinking. They are not coming from your mind or from your thoughts. And that's the same source, what is inside of you. And reaching for that one allows you to observe, listen, and do things way better. And being humble means that you're receptive. You're sensing what's happening, observing what's happening all the time. And you're sensitive for those signals coming. And this means that you can handle people better because you're listening to them, what they're really saying. You're not thinking what you're going to say next, or you are not distracted by some other thoughts or information or whatever happening around you. So these are the things that enable you to perform and interact better with your world. And this inner silence, state of being quiet, is helping to focus, and that's truly a different way of living.
You know, that's interesting. You use the word distractions. Well, you have to have that word somewhere in this discussion, because distractions means that I can actually discern what I want to hear, and I can turn on what I want to hear, and I can turn off what I want to hear. So if I will allow something to distract me, it's because I allow it to distract me. But if I want to turn off from that same distraction, I can still think and shut it off my mind. So subliminally, I'm actually, that's interesting. That's like the mom gang turning off from the child. She's not allowing that child crying and noise making. She's not allowing that to interrupt her, whatever she's doing. Does that have any, am I speaking on the right thing, or what is going on there?
Yes. When you practice and you're getting better to listen to your inner voice or your sound of silence and being calm inside, that enables you also to focus better for those tasks you want to do. But in the beginning, when when there's a lot of distractions and your mind is jumping and you have a maybe rather short time, focus or time span that you can do something, one thing at a time, then it's easier to shut down those external sources of noise as much as possible, radio, TV, whatever you're doing, and focus on one thing at a time. And this is very good practice to start practicing this type of working meditation or just everyday meditation. You just focus on one thing at a time. If you're eating, just taste the food. How does it taste? What's the texture of the food? What does it look like? And just eat while you're eating. And when you're writing an email, write an email. And this helps us to do those things more efficiently, more focused, and I believe we can achieve more things by doing this. It doesn't mean that you have to switch off everything and be in just the silent surroundings, but after a while you can just disregard all those things. But you have to become sort of a master before you can start to do those things, and it's getting more easier and easier. So the external noises and distractions do not disturb you anymore. You can just switch them off.
Well, that's interesting. So I am going to conclude that there is no silence. Am I taking a giant step there?
Well, what is silence? What is noise? For someone, silence is someone's noise. And what is sound? It's vibration. And there are a lot of sounds which you cannot hear or we cannot hear. For example, I think it was yesterday's news in Boston or whatever newspaper that some person was recording sounds of Earth. How does our Mother Earth sound like? And obviously the frequency was so low that we cannot hear it by ourselves, but he made some, speeded up and did some other things, and it sounded interesting, different voices. So what is sound, what is silence? That's also up to us to decide.
So again, sound can be all around us, but now we're getting to decibels. I understand an elephant or even a whale can actually make sounds at a decibel level that humans can't pick up. Dogs can pick up sounds that humans can't pick up. And what happens is, I understand elephants can communicate for miles and miles and miles with each family, a tribe, if you will, a group. And whales can do the same thing. They measure that the whales can send out certain sounds on a decibel level that humans can't pick up, but another whale, tons of miles away, can pick up on. What do you think of that?
Well, our senses are tuned only to a very narrow band of frequencies. Like, there are animals which can hear better, bats, for example, and that's the common knowledge or understanding at this point, that they use mainly sound to get a visual picture in their mind. So there are different ways to actually see and perceive this world. It's not the same for everyone. Some people are colorblind, some are even blind, they don't see anything, but they have a maybe higher sense of hearing voices, and they can touch more, they are more sensitive in other senses. So all these things just give us a different picture from the world. If you're using equipment, we can see in the dark, and so everything around us is emissioning just frequencies of energy, and we can just interpret those frequencies differently. And this way, there are a lot of different animals and different ways of experiencing this world, and it would look entirely different if we do it differently. So what I'm saying is that by focusing and being also patient and seeing things a bit differently, you may tune up for different things and start to experience a bit more. And if you listen to, that's what's happening, for example, the music nowadays. All the recordings are mainly done so that there's no lot of dynamics involved anymore. So there's no silent and high peaks in the sound volumes anymore. And this means that it's sort of coming the same. It doesn't feel so fantastic anymore. And the same can happen to us when we're living. If we're just using a very narrow band of our smell and taste and our hearing and how we see things, we are missing a lot. So there are senses and we should use them. But unfortunately, many times we just distracted, or we just focused on our thoughts or some other things happening in our mind, and we don't see anything, we don't recognize anything. Everything looks the same. Every day we're going to work, it's the same route, it's boring, nothing happens, except that it's never the same. It's always new. There's always new things. There's never the same things. It's not the same world repeating itself over and over again, each and every moment and each and every day. There's nothing what is the same ever. So in that sense, you know, we should just open our eyes and listen. And we can also see and hear more things and different things that we have never experienced before.
Very good. And I'd just like to close with this. The last paragraph here says, silence can teach us to let us experience something new. When we experience it more deeply, we start to realize that emptiness and silence are not totally without anything. Actually, they are the opposite. But we have to be open-minded and humble to experience the sounds of silence. I've really enjoyed this session with Peter, and I'm sure that you, too, are very much enriched. And I'd like to thank you again, Peter, for being with us and for helping the audience out and helping all of us to think and think things through. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.